You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host, and today we're going to talk about how to fight rare diseases. You know, we all hear about many of the mainstream diseases, but we want to know today how we go about dealing with those diseases that few people have heard about. And with me today to talk about this important topic is Kari Rosebeck, who is the CEO of the TSC Alliance, and Sue Sherman, who is the president of the LAM Foundation. And these two organizations work together quite a bit, but they also work on diseases that very few in our society have heard of. So welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thanks for having us, Art.
Great. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let me just talk for a minute about why I asked you to join this podcast today. You know, there are all kinds of problems that we have to solve in the world. There are problems that are relatively easy to solve. I mean, we know the answers. It's just a matter of getting the money together and the people lined up and the talent, and we can go out and solve them. And these are things that businesses generally deal with, right? Because somebody's figured out, well, we can make some money doing that. So they go solve those problems. And then there are what I would consider to be catastrophic problems, like COVID. COVID is a catastrophic problem because lots and lots of people can get it. Lots and lots of people can die from it. The threat to our way of life is apparent. And so we can get government, we can get businesses, and we can get charities all working together because the stakes feel so high to so many people. So we can get action on catastrophic problems. But then there are persistent problems, what I call persistent problems. And these are problems where the marketplace doesn't necessarily pick them up right away because the answer either isn't really clear for how to solve the problem, and maybe there's not a way to make money off of that. And so businesses aren't likely to do it. But if anybody's going to do anything with it, it's probably going to be some type of charitable organization that takes time to invest to solve that particular problem. And even charities aren't necessarily equipped to do it because it's a tough problem that you're asked to solve. I mean, the answer isn't apparent, but you've decided to spend some of your time and career working on it. And what I want to figure out from you two ladies is what drives you to work on problems like this. And we're going to get into each of your areas, the diseases that you're working on, these rare diseases that get very little attention, where the cures are not here with us yet, and some of the treatments aren't necessarily here with us yet. But you get up every day and work on this. You get up every day and try to convince people to support the organization and the work that you're doing. And you get up every day and try to find an answer or answers to this puzzle that you're dealing with relative to these particular diseases. And it's got to be, you know, not always joyful, right? It's got to be sometimes very frustrating. It's got to be sometimes very painful. And so what I want to know in this particular show today is why you do it. I mean, you could spend your time doing something else. You could spend your time working on a problem that has a solution, or going out and making a lot more money on something that's really obvious. Why do you do this? I really want to know, what makes Kari get up every morning and work on this problem? And you've been doing it for 20 years, I found out. 20 years. That's a quarter of a normal lifetime. And Sue Sherman, you've been working similarly on a problem for which there's no yet answer. Why do you do it? And how do you convince others to join this with you? So I'm asking a lot of questions before I've asked you to talk, but I just want to set the stage for what we're trying to do here, because I think you're working on things that most people haven't heard of. We've all heard of cancer. We've all heard of heart disease. These are diseases that people give hundreds of millions of dollars to every year. And we think we understand why, but what are we doing here? Why are you doing it? So let me start with you, Kari.
Tell us about what the TSC Alliance does.
The TSC Alliance is a nonprofit organization representing a rare disease called tuberous sclerosis complex. We are dedicated to finding a cure for TSC, tuberous sclerosis complex, while improving the lives of those affected. And we do that by providing support and information to anybody impacted by the disease, by advocating for and with those living with TSC, and by truly funding and driving research to better treatments and ultimately a cure. Tuberous sclerosis complex, as I said, is a rare genetic disorder. It causes tumors to grow throughout the body and is the leading genetic cause of epilepsy and autism. It affects about 1 in 6,000 live births, about 50,000 Americans, and 1 million people worldwide. And no two people, not even identical twins, are impacted in exactly the same way.
Sue, tell me about the LAM Foundation.
So the LAM Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit, and our mission is to urgently seek safe and effective treatments and ultimately a cure for lymphangioleiomyomatosis, which we call LAM for short. And we do this through advocacy and through funding promising research. But we're dedicated to serving our scientific, medical, and patient communities. And we offer information, resources, and a worldwide network of hope and support. Lymphangioleiomyomatosis, or LAM, is an extremely rare lung disease that typically strikes women. And it's characterized by abnormal smooth muscle cells that typically travel to the lungs, the kidneys, the lymphatic system. LAM is extremely rare. It's estimated for that every 1 million women, 3 to 5, may have LAM. The average age of diagnosis for someone with LAM is 35 years of age. And there are actually two forms of LAM. One is called sporadic LAM, which happens randomly, and the other is called tuberous sclerosis LAM, which occurs in women who have a rare disease called the tuberous sclerosis complex.
Kari and Sue, I'm also very interested in how you got connected to this particular work.
What got me to my career at the TSC Alliance is that I wanted to be an actor my whole life. I lived in New York, and when I had my first child, after my husband and I moved to Minnesota, she died of sudden infant death. And at that point, it really changed the trajectory of my life. I'd always worked in nonprofits as my day job. But at that point, I found meaning in my life and hers by focusing on other families. And I initially worked in international relief and development. And one of my mentors, who I worked with at an international relief and development organization, actually became the CEO of the TSC Alliance in the early 2000s, and I followed him, and it just has become a lifelong passion.
Well, I consider this to be a very fortunate progression of a career that's been dedicated to healthcare, and specifically the business side of healthcare. So after college, thinking that I no longer wanted to be a physician, I was drawn to a degree in healthcare administration, which for me was the perfect blend of my business acumen and wanting to give back and be in the healthcare sector. So after many years of working in hospitals, tertiary treatment centers, psychiatric facilities, and doing some work with nonprofits, I became aware of the LAM Foundation, which was located in my hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio. They were looking for an executive director. And after one of the most thorough job search processes I've ever been through, I was brought on board as their executive director. And for me, it's been the perfect blend of everything that I've done to my career to date, which is caring for patients, looking at the business side of medicine, working in mental health, and serving as a nonprofit leader. So that's how I was drawn to the LAM Foundation.
So Kari and Sue, what are some of the challenges associated with working on a disease or ailments that very few people have heard about? You know, we all have heard about heart disease or cancer or diabetes or other more well-known diseases that many people seem to be afflicted by. But we don't hear so much about the diseases that you're working on. And I'm just wondering, are there special challenges associated with developing support and truly getting people to recognize that these diseases need attention?
I think I might actually turn that around and say there are tremendous opportunities. So in some senses, a lot of people are working on these more common diseases, heart disease and cancer, and they're all deserving, and they all lead to incredible breakthroughs that are important for all of us as a part of humanity. Yet in these rare conditions, there's almost a wider space to get involved and make a difference because no one else is doing it. And the inspiration for pushing for this every day, I find in the families, in the spouses, in the children who are really fighting for their loved one. And also almost equally as exciting and inspiring is in the work of the scientists and the doctors. They become impassioned and connected to these patients and families because we all know we're making a difference every moment of every day. So it's not hard to be inspired when you're inside these communities. At least that's my experience.
I just want to add on to what Sue is saying. In our rare diseases, the connectivity between the scientists, the families, the staff, the leadership, the corporate partners we work with, it's very intimate. It's high touch. It's high impact. You know, every single day, even though we might not at the end of the day cure the disease, that we are truly making a difference. And whether it's one-on-one with a family that we talk with, that we get to a clinic to help, in our case with TSC, to help a baby experiencing infantile spasms, or it's an adult who's struggling to find a clinic for proper care, or it is, for both of us, a huge research breakthrough that leads to treatments. Both of us have, and I'll let Sue talk about LAM specific, but there are approximately 7,000 rare diseases. 5% have an actual FDA approved treatment. Both of our disease states have an approved treatment, and those have happened during Sue and I's tenure as leaders in our organizations. And then you really know, because it's disease modifying, what a difference you have made. And you've done it because you've empowered your community to build a grassroots movement that's led to research breakthroughs, that's led to these approved treatments. It's really so incredibly motivating and inspiring every day.
Wow, thanks for that. So here's a question I have for both of you, and it is, we seem to rely on charitable organizations for diseases that we don't know a whole lot about, and I'm just curious why that is. I mean, most people would think, oh, well, they're pharmaceutical companies, they're research organizations that do this. Why do we need charities doing it? Why aren't governments and other entities doing it? Why do we seem to need to rely on charities to do this work?
So I will just say, especially in these rare diseases, it's not just about the research being done or the medications that are being developed. It's also about helping people through the journey. That's not something a pharmaceutical company necessarily does. In our organizations, the real peer-to-peer support that happens, the understanding the little intricacies about the disease that you can learn from somebody else that's walked that journey, those are really part of the purpose of our organizations. And you're not going to find that in a larger research lab, a government-funded program. And that's really the niche that we fit into. But we also create a focus on our rare diseases. We go and meet, in the TSC Alliance's case, with 9 different institutes at NIH so that they remember our organization, what we're doing to fund and drive research, how we can partner together to really move the needle. And I think that's the role, unique role that we play.
And I would amplify what Kari just said on 2 levels. Absolutely. What we're able to do to support patients and family members who are stricken with these rare conditions. A woman diagnosed with LAM may never meet another person with this disease in her day-to-day until she gets connected with our foundation and then is directly introduced to others with the disease and then may meet them at educational events. Or importantly, and connected to the second part of what Kari said, which is at the National Institutes of Health, there has been a 22-year protocol studying LAM. So it may not be widely known, as is a lot of the things that the National Institutes of Health, what they do. They are studying our diseases, and they are very connected with our patient organizations and in driving this forward. So it's part of that intimacy that Kari mentioned earlier, that it's everyone is so connected, from scientists to the government, to the pharma, to the physicians and the patients and families, all working to better understand these conditions and live better lives, honestly.
So I want to talk a minute about your supporters. Are they people generally who have some connection to the disease, or are you able to get people who know very little about it until you connect with them to be supportive? And what's the case that you make to get people to support what you're doing?
We first start with our base of supporters. And I think at the TSC Alliance, that has been primarily family members. We do have some family members of means that have been quite generous, that have been transformational to our research. In the 20 years I've been here, we've grown from a $2.1 million budget to $7 million today. And that's by really joining hand in hand with those families of means and saying, you can help transform what we're doing in research. Let's join together to make a difference. We have been able to get more support outside of our organization now, primarily from companies or industry. We still haven't broken through all the private foundations, but our case is, in TSC, we are really a model disease to study that will have an impact on research and potential treatments for epilepsy, for autism, and for cancer. So though you're studying this rare disease really closely, you can have this ripple effect. And just one example of that is the TSC Alliance with our Clinical Research Consortium worked on the first preventative clinical trial for epilepsy in the United States. It was NIH funded. We put some money in. We helped with the recruitment into that trial by educating our community. And so that's where you're really moving the needle.
And I would add to that, from the LAM Foundation's perspective, we're even a smaller group than the Tuberous Sclerosis Complex Alliance. So a little over 90% of all the funding that's ever been given to the LAM Foundation, which is now in 25 years, we've raised more than $27 million, but 90% of that has been from patients and families. This is really about donors of all means supporting their loved one by giving to our foundation. And breaking out of that level of funding is challenging. But we, like the TSC Alliance, know that elements of what's been discovered about the disease of LAM has been instructive and informative related to cancer and diabetes because of the metabolic pathway. So research and investigation into rare diseases provides answers to more chronic conditions. And that's one of the main things that we talk about when we're talking to donors.
So as the young people would say, don't sleep on rare diseases if you want to donate, because you could be curing something that's far more mainstream or helping to find treatments for diseases and ailments that are far more mainstream that are found when we're, you know, researching the diseases that are considered more rare. That needs to get out, I think. And I hope people who are listening to the show today will take that into account when they're contemplating making a gift. I know that in most cases, and you're seeing that too, when we think about supporting a disease fighting organization, we do it because we've been affected personally. But sometimes when you look slightly away, you find cures for things that you didn't think about. And I think maybe that's what we're seeing here. I'm astonished to know that what you're dealing with can also help with diabetes, or it could help with, you know, other diseases that, you know, we didn't even think about. And diabetes is at almost, in my opinion, a pretty widely challenging disease. Lots of people have diabetes in this country. And if supporting you would help us find ways to treat that, people ought to know about that, it seems to me. So I'm happy to hear you talk more broadly about how the work you're doing can benefit not only people with your particular ailment, but with other ailments as well. So let me ask this. If I were to say to you, and both of you have been doing this work for a while, what makes you really excited when you come to work, working on a disease, the diseases that you work on? What is it that wakes you up in the morning and says, I'm going to do this again today, and I'm going to wake up the next day and do it again the next day? And you, as you said, you've seen some success. You've seen some success, so that should drive you. But working on any type of health problem, you don't get the immediate rush of success. You know, these problems take a time to resolve. And I ask you these questions because I think about people who want to enter our space in general, who want to enter the nonprofit sector in general, who may be thinking they want to have some type of impact and they want to do it and then maybe stop doing it. But it takes a while, doesn't it? And so you're going to have these ups and downs. You're going to have these great days and not so good days, days when you want to quit. What keeps you going? How do you do this for 20 years?
Yeah, I think as a nonprofit leader, part of it is putting together the puzzle that over time, being very strategic, having a great strategic plan, you can look back and see the impact. I am very fortunate to have been here 20 years to see that. But what gets me up every day is, what piece are we going to put in place today that's going to lead us one step closer to the strategic plan and people living with TSC closer to living their fullest life? That's what gets me up every single day. And it takes time, as you said, Art, as a younger CEO a couple of years ago, like 14, I was really anxious. Like, I got to make a difference right now, today. And you've just got to learn it takes time, because anything worth doing takes time, and to be strategic takes time. But looking back over 20 years, I can see all the different puzzle pieces that we put in place and what an impact they're having today. I look at our research platform, which started with just basic grants when I first started the TSC Alliance. Then we added a natural history database. Then we added a clinical research consortium. Then we added a biosample repository, then a preclinical. We did that over 20 years, not in year one. We took time to build those programs so that we could sustain them. And what that means overall is we're really pushing drug development now because we took the time to set the programs up right and make them sustainable and scalable.
I would, again, add to that. So the TSC Alliance is 46 years old this year?
47.
47, okay. And the LAM Foundation is 26. And they have actually served as a big sister organization to us for so many of those years. And what Kari just talked about is the maybe surprising to some people, the sophistication of these rare disease foundations. We have to figure it all out, whether it's strategic planning and following the research, supporting the patients, raising the money. There's not a shortcut. Whether you're a $1.5 million organization, a $7 million organization, or a $20 million organization. You have to figure it all out. And having those plans in place, as Kari said, and watching the progress from the early, very earliest days of no research, few physicians who would know how to treat LAM, and very little hope to an FDA-approved treatment in 2015, similarly, a global clinic network where women can get to 65 different locations and find someone who knows what LAM is and how to treat it, to a worldwide connection of patient and patient organizations that are all basically a sisterhood of support. So that, on the bigger scale, gives us hope. The other thing is coming into work every day, there is always something to inspire you. Whether it's a donation that you didn't expect, whether it's a mother of a recently diagnosed LAM patient calling and being able to cry but leaving the call with hope, whether it's simply one of your clinic directors sending you a funny picture of their dog and saying, you know, this has been a great day. There's always a reason for hope and inspiration every day.
I agree with that. And I've been working all of my life just about in one nonprofit or another, last 20 years with the Wise Giving Alliance. And our work is much more, I would say, supportive of organizations. You know, we don't necessarily touch individuals all that much, although we get calls from people who tell us, because of your work, I feel like I gave to a better charity. And that always makes me feel good. But we do a lot of supporting organizations like yours to be able to do the kind of work that you're doing. And so I get my rush, I guess, when I get to talk to ladies like you who tell me how inspired you are about your work and the connections that we have together to try to make the world better. If you were to talk about how to get your work done more collaboratively, and I know you're big collaborators and I'm big on collaboration. We actually published a list of 9 considerations for organizations that want to collaborate, everything from starting with trust to seeking to assure the success of your collaborator to keeping your funders appraised, a number of important elements that go into collaborating well. But it seems that the two of you have worked well together. And what's kept you working well together? Why is it that you've succeeded? And give us some examples of how you've succeeded in working together and how it's expanded both of your jobs.
Thank you for that question, Art. Collaboration is extremely important in the rare disease community. And 8 years ago now, I think I first met Kari and Steve at the TSC Alliance. And at that moment, they welcomed me when I joined the LAM Foundation and said, we want to work with you. We have a lot in common. And of course, I was eager and hopeful for those kinds of words. And it's turned out to be true for every year since. I think the reason that we're able to collaborate seamlessly is because we have very similar missions and because it always comes down to what's best for the patients. And when we ask and answer the question of what's best for the patients, we find ways to do things together, like hosting educational conferences across the country. I think, Kari, have we done 9 or 10?
13, I think.
13. Okay. See, I've even lost count. Maybe Kari can write down the list of the cities where we've done that over the last 4 or 5 years. We've hosted international research conferences and patient conferences together, in addition to those regional conferences. We realized early on that we have a very overlapping scientific network. So our researchers are studying the same things. And when they come to our organizations for research funding, we saw that there might be an opportunity to collaborate in how we fund them. So we've jointly supported research grants. We have, gosh, Kari, help me out. We've done so many things together.
Well, we're just starting a new partnership with our biosample repository. And so the LAM Foundation and TSC Alliance are going to collaborate by having biosamples in the TSC biosample repository linked to the LAM registry and linked to the natural history database. The genes that are mutated in both of our diseases are the same. So that's why there's so much overlap. And then I just add, I think Sue and I just work really well together. We communicate often. We don't ever hesitate to pick up the phone and talk through an issue. And in all of our collaborative projects, we start with a written plan and who is going to take responsibility for what, and how can, as Sue said, how can we further breakthroughs for patients by working collaboratively and amplifying our work rather than doing it individually or duplicating work. I think we've seen that. The other thing that we have collaborated on is the TSC research program at the Department of Defense. So TSC is the gene that impacts both of our diseases, and that program at the Department of Defense funds both research in LAM and TSC, and we work together to advocate for appropriations from Congress to that particular program. And it's just been groundbreaking. There have been clinical trials that have been funded in LAM and TSC through that program and just some basic grants. So I think there isn't one part of our organizations that we haven't collaborated in one way or another.
And I would add one final thing to that. And we collaborate on things that are planned. And because we have this rapport, we're also able to problem solve in the moment. And I think the year 2020 was a great example of that, when we collaborated to address the impact of COVID on our patient populations. So if COVID is scary, to say the least, COVID with a rare lung condition is sort of beyond words. And we came together very quickly with our scientific and medical leadership to host town halls, to publish guidelines for how you should conduct yourself if you have one of these two conditions in the world of COVID. And I think that that was just vitally important to our success in helping our communities get through that difficult year, or 2 years, if you will.
Speaking of patients, I'm glad you brought that up, because you're doing this obviously for people, real people who are impacted by this. And sometimes as nonprofit leaders, we tend to focus on the what and not necessarily the who. And the who are, really people who are, trying to live their lives as normally as possible with, some debilitation. And I guess the question I have for you both is, as you think about them, how did COVID affect them? And what might we do differently now as we come out of COVID that may continue to positively impact them? And did you hear from people during the pandemic? And did you get a sense of what some of their needs were as a result?
COVID was hugely impactful in the TSC community, as I know it is in the LAM, and I'll let Sue answer for the LAM community. So a large portion of our population are on mTOR inhibitors or immunosuppressors. So that was a huge concern when COVID happened, because people thought they might be more vulnerable to contracting COVID. So they really quarantined and hunkered down. There were parents that also had to be school teachers. Our families dealt with escalated behaviors because some behavioral issues are associated with TSC. And so they had to be teachers, medical professionals, and behavioral interventionalists all during COVID while working and trying to sustain their families. It was very difficult, which is why we collaboratively did the town halls together to provide information about how you could live with this disease and how we could survive. We provided 15 webinars during the first 11 weeks of COVID just to give people information that they could use. Everything from how do you educate your kids at home to how do you apply for unemployment to how do you do telehealth behavioral visits with your therapist. And I think what we learned out of that is we reached many more people because we did these webinars virtually. It's also a time where we're looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? And not everybody in an inner city can go to a meeting in the suburbs. And how do we reach more people? I understand there's a digital divide as well, and we need to figure out how to impact all people affected by TSC. And we have some active strategies we're working on now. But what we learned out of COVID is we reached even more people by having online meetings than we would have having meetings in select cities around the country.
Yeah, I would say very similar experiences for the LAM patient community. The impact of COVID, isolation, fear, shortages, all of those things, maybe just slightly magnified for this group of people who were, affected with a lung condition and thinking that, we didn't know how COVID was spread or what the impact would be. So we listened a lot. We were also engaged online as much as we could be. And I think it has made us even more sensitive to the needs of our patient community.
Well, this is the Heart of Giving podcast. So I have to ask you both questions about what we do to inspire others to do like you. And I'm just curious, are there things about your lives that we could share, things about your experiences that might be the words that someone needs to hear who may be sitting on the fence and trying to decide whether they volunteer their time or whether they donate their money or whether they advocate for a cause or whether they join a friend in a march, what have you. Are there things about your experience that you could share with them that might be the words that they need to hear to go to that place where they can begin to make a difference too?
That's a wonderful question. I guess what I would say is there is a depth and richness of experience when you go deep into something you love. And what I mean by that is when I give presentations to medical students or early career scientists, but I think more so on the medical side, and you try to just talk about a rare disease and how that could possibly come up on the radar of someone who's studying to be a cardiologist or a pediatrician or any kind of physician. What we say is pick one rare disease and get to know it. You may try one or two before you connect, but that when you connect into a rare disease that has much less attention, you're going to meet fellow caregivers, you're going to meet patients, and you're going to meet families who are going to be so touched and grateful and impressed by your curiosity about where they are and what they're going through, that whether you stay with it or not, it will leave an impression. And so for me, the LAM Foundation is similar to that in that it sort of pulls together all the things that I've loved doing in my career, whether it's having a direct experience with patients and families, working with scientists, working with doctors, understanding the mental health issues that go along with any chronic condition. It's it just opens up this entire world that you didn't know existed. So I would encourage anyone to find that thing that is important to you and then find a nonprofit that does that and learn more. Your mind may be blown by how much there is in terms of rewards.
Wonderful.
And I just add, it's so moving and meaningful in rare disease that you really get to see the impact of your gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom. And we've had some board members that are from our corporate partners that don't have a child impacted, but working alongside, say, going with somebody to a congressional visit and saying, this matters to me because I'm a corporate leader, but I understand and have gained the knowledge of the journey that these families face. And they're so moved by it. They become dedicated and committed because they can see, physically see the difference that they are making day to day. So whether you're a donor or a corporate partner, a family member, somebody who wants to volunteer, somebody who wants to serve in a leadership role, somebody wants to plan a walk, you know that you're going to be making a difference. And I will tell you, because our organizations are both part of the Wise Giving Alliance, we use every dime effectively. We stretch dollars further than most organizations can think of. And so I would say, if you want to be involved with an organization where you know every dollar matters, come to our rare disease community and see the impact of your gifts.
Well, I really appreciate that. You know, to me, I've been very fortunate, and knock wood, none of my family members are affected by anything quite like what you're dealing with. And so I'll just say, if they were, it would matter so much to me that there are people who care, that there are people who have this warmth about them when it comes to talking about and trying to address the problems associated with these particular diseases. It would matter to me that there was someone or some people who we could turn to, some organization that is spending the better part of their lives and a good chunk of their careers trying to do something about it. It would take away the loneliness. It would take away the isolation and the helplessness that I think I would feel if my family members were affected by anything like what you're dealing with. So, and our healthcare network is so hard, right? It's so hard to navigate. You know, we don't even know where to turn, even when we have insurance and support. To know that there are people out there working on this is got to be very, very meaningful to those who are afflicted and their families. So I'll just thank you on behalf of them for what you do and for doing it the length of time and with the depth, as Sue said, that you've been doing it, working in collaboration with each other, and obviously putting some joy in the lives of families that are dealing with some very, very difficult issues. So let me just, by way of closing out our conversation, just say that. Just say thank you for what you're giving and for what you're doing, and to encourage as best I can others to join you in your work in any way that they can, whether that be through a donation or whether that be volunteering or supporting you in any other way. Let me just ask for that as well. So anyway, let me just again thank you for joining us, and I really appreciate you, and there you have it.
Thank you, Art.
We appreciate you.
You've been listening to the Heart of Giving podcast, and our guests have been Kari Rosbeck with the TSC Alliance and Sue Sherman with the Lamb Foundation. And to all our listeners, we hope you'll subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcast platform. And we'd really appreciate it if you leave us a positive review, especially on Apple Podcasts. That helps us build audience. And if you want to help out a little more, you can become a sustaining donor on Patreon, patreon.com. Finally, we want to hear from you. You can reach us online on Facebook or just send us an email to heartofgivingpod@gmail.com. Thank you very much.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platform. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's terms of service.